guys, Jamie here with ThinkMeFlyThink.com. Welcome you as always to another edition of Movie Moan. With me as always is Mr. Phil G. Phil, say hello, sir.
Hello, everybody. My name's Phil G, the English gentleman at your service. I'm a happy bunny today, unlike Jamie, because Jamie got mugged by Will Ferrell this week, but me, I'm absolutely fine.
You got mugged by Christian Bale, apparently. More appropriately, you were mugged by McG. So you were McMugged this weekend. And of course, with us as always is Mr. Ed Hawkins. Hello, sir.
Hello there. I myself got to see the glory that is Zach Galifianakis' beard. It's a mighty beard, I tell you.
With the surprise smash, no less, The Hangover, which I guess, I mean, you know, we were talking beforehand. It was like, I don't know what happened this week, and we were talking about stuff that happened. It wasn't really much, but I guess it's not the big story of the weekend, but man, The Hangover kicked ass this weekend. We got the early studio estimates have it at number two with $43.2 million this weekend. Just about $1 million separated it and Up, which Up only dropped 35% from last weekend. God damn
wow.
It. $44 million this weekend. So this Up's got the – Up is going to be playing long haul. It's going to be probably neck and neck with it in Star Trek for who will be the third top grossing movie of the summer, most likely.
If I were Disney, I'd be saying to myself, it might be worth sending it over to the Brits now. You know, let's spread the wealth around. Let's make some more money now.
You would think
strike
that.
While the iron's hot.
We know that Disney hates the Brits because they made Bedknobs and Broomsticks. We just know this already. So that's proof in the pudding right there.
Well, we hate them back.
Well, you didn't like that movie? That was a joke. I liked that movie as a kid.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen it and you're British?
No.
God damn it, dude. What the fuck's wrong with you?
Conform to your narrow stereotypes.
Even when the day you told me that you had never seen Excalibur, like, that shocked me. But still, like, now you haven't seen Bedknobs and Broomsticks. I'm just like, I mean, dude, what else haven't you seen British-wise? I mean,
Danger Mouse.
Oh, God, don't tell me haven't seen Danger Mouse. You
that's
have?
Not true. I grew up with Danger Mouse.
Good. My God. Did you watch Count Duckula?
Of course.
Good. All right. We're. Did you like Mr. Bean as a child?
A couple of sketches, not all of it.
All right. I'm trying to like quiz you real quick for British pop culture. You know, as quickly as I can. I know that they did the I Heart the 80s, I Heart the Decade. It started off in the UK. Did you watch that?
Yes.
Okay. Is it better than the VH1 version?
Yes.
It is? Okay. I've always
is
wanted
Pete
to...
Burns in it? Or...
House Bars?
No.
Alright. But I was curious. I'm sure you can, like, throw stereotypes at me now, Phil, since we're, you know, we can even ourselves out.
You ain't worth the trouble, Sonny.
Alright, anyway. So, Phil, now you got to see a movie this week. Now, what did you see, sir?
Well, I did see Star Trek for the third time. But I also saw Terminator Salvation. It finally came out in the UK. Personally, I don't want to call it Terminator Salvation. I'd rather call it a Terminator Vapor, because that's what it was. It was vapor. It was emptiness. It was nothingness. I stepped out of the theater, and I forgot all about it. It was 2 hours of yelling and explosions. Specifically, people running away from explosions. Now, true, a lot of action movies are like that, but I just found it very, very weird how this was a full 2-hour movie, and yet there wasn't a single moment of characterization going on there. I just kept thinking, Bryce Dallas Howard, what are you doing in this? Where are you going? Why is your character even in this? I don't get it. There was so much that I didn't understand. I didn't hate it as much as Lou did, I think. I mean, Lou, as he said last week, really thought it was terrible. Me, I just thought it was lame. And I might get on the bandwagon with those passionate Cameron acolytes now and just say 3 and 4 don't exist in the continuity. And there's only 2 and 1 and might just watch them. I don't know. There were 3 things specifically which bugged me.
Right.
Number one, I kind of wish the movie had been able to be made 10 to 15 years ago So Arnold could have played the part of Marcus. Because then...
That would have been interesting. Wow.
Exactly. It would make it interesting. It would finally solve the mystery of why all the T-800s and the T-101s look like Arnold. As it is, Marcus goes
Sergeant,
to
Skynet. Well, they're Sergeant Candy. I mean, are you trying to disregard that cinematic gem?
Yes, I am, or if I can.
You did not
if
like that?
If you'll let me forget about it. All yes, right. Thank you, Jamie. For those of you who don't know what he's talking about, there is basically a deleted scene in Terminator 3. I think it's deleted from the video game or something. I'm not quite sure. But basically, where the guys from Skynet or whatever it was called in Terminator 3, they're looking at the robotics, a promo video of the robotics, and there's a guy called Sergeant William Candy, who is Arnold, but he talks with this ridiculous
Southern accent. Worse than mine, folks.
Which is, it is offensive. If I was a Southerner, I probably would be offended. And,
really?
Of course, it's supposed to be funny, and he's saying he's the model for the Terminators, and it's really just silly and campy. But anyway, it wasn't in the movie, so I guess it doesn't count. Marcus goes to Skynet. He's told he's the first in a long line of infiltration units, and I'm thinking, well, okay, but why does all the other guys look like Arnold? So that was bugging me. A lot. And if Arnold's been able to play the part of Marcus, again, like I said, 10 to 15 years ago, then I think, because I was happy with Marcus's backstory, and let's face it, the role of Marcus did not really require any dramatic acting, so Arnold could have played that part easily, I think, and I think it would have been much, much better. The whole thing of Arnold himself actually showing up, well, as you all know, Warner Brothers is so desperate to get people to see this film that they actually let out their secret in the TV spot, the new TV spot this week.
Well,
so I actually saw that scene.
Yeah, I don't think that's being stressed enough. That is a foreign TV spot. Everyone's assuming that's in the States, but it's not because, one, the rating's not given at the end of the TV spot, and second, Sony is listed, not Marvel, heavens. Warner Brothers, because Sony is distributing the film in the international markets. That gave it away. And if you remember, Phil, I have said this on multiple times. I said, guaranteed, they're going to cut a TV spot for the foreign markets that shows Arnold because he's so popular overseas still, just to fool people into thinking he's in the movie. And they did.
That is the white flag going up. That is, we surrender. That is the hook. It's a great idea. I'm not going to criticize him for the fact that it doesn't really work because it is a CGI Arnold and it just doesn't look very
It's hysterical.
Real.
It is hysterical. It I is laughed hysterical, my ass off gonna... when I saw that. I could not believe they actually did that.
I think we were kind of stunned. But, I mean, like I said, it wasn't stunning for me because I saw it in the TV spot on the internet, so the cat was out of the bag. I'm not going to criticize him for that because, personally, I think it was a great idea. They needed some kind of hook, and that was a fantastic hook to get bums on seats, and it didn't work out. So,
I am curious what the box office numbers are in the UK, as a matter of fact. I don't think they're here yet, but I'm very curious how it does this weekend.
Well, you know what?
What?
I went to see it, and it was half full.
Ooh.
But I saw Star Trek earlier that day, and that was also exactly half full. So the same amount of people seeing Star Trek a month after release. And some of them were there for the first time. Some of them hadn't seen it before.
That makes sense.
A lot of old people.
That makes sense. No, it makes perfect sense because this is a very much a word of mouth movie. Let's be fair. Star Trek opened huge. I mean, it really did open big, but that flick was going to be dependent on word of mouth and reviews, and it just, you know, that's why it's the huge smash it is right now. But go ahead.
I hope it crosses the 300 domestic.
That's not happening. It's actually at the rate it's going, it's going to probably do around 240 to 250 is going to be its total number, which is amazing because it's hard. I don't think people realize how hard it is for a movie to make $200 million domestically. Everyone thinks it's so easy. It's like, no, it's not. It's hard.
No, it's true. That's very, very true. Anyway, the other thing, you and I were talking about Linda Hamilton.
Yes.
Linda Hamilton's going to show. And I said, well, she makes all those tape recordings to John just before she gives birth to him, so it would be a damn shame if they didn't do that. And they did do that, so that was great. But I'm watching it, and she's saying literally word for word everything she says in the final scene of Terminator 1. And I'm thinking to myself, why didn't they just use the lines, why didn't they just use, you know, her stuff from Terminator 1 instead of getting her to re-record it? As a fan, it is far more distracting to me, the fact that, you know, current day Linda Hamilton with a deeper, hoarse voice, as opposed to, you know, 80s squeaky voice Linda Hamilton, is saying exactly the same lines that she says in Terminator 1. It's just distracting, and I checked out of the movie because I couldn't possibly understand why they needed her to re-record those lines. If she was saying something completely different, then fine, but she wasn't, so I didn't get that at all. The other thing, this is the big thing, I have been stunned by McGee's vision of the future. He's clearly telling us something here, folks. What McGee wants you to know about the future, if the machines take over and we're all fighting back to reclaim the planet, everybody in the future who has a beard is an arsehole. That's what McGee is trying to tell you. There wasn't a single person with a beard in this movie who was decent. Every single person who has a... People, if we ever get to the apocalypse and you see a guy with a beard, kill him. Just stop it before he can take your food, tell you to shut up, try and rape you, disregard everything you say. Just kill the people with the beards. They're the real threats. Honestly, even if they have... And, you know, Marcus and John Connor, they have half beards, so they're half good and half arseholes. The only people who are good are the clean-shaven people. Kyle Reese, that, you know, Asian chick, and Bryce Dallas Howard. They, and, oh, and the little kid, of course.
Yeah, the little kid.
The good
people. That would have been awesome. That would have been awesome if the little kid had a beard, and, like, we find out she's evil. But she has
clearly a fake beard, too, with the strings on it. And, which is, this is very funny, because... where the hell are they getting running water to shave?
This is exactly.
That's yeah.
What are they dry shaving? That's terrible.
Well, yeah. I'm sure they're finding lots of bottled water around or something
maybe.
Like that.
I'm sure they're using their precious water resources.
That's probably the base. You know, I was surprised you didn't bring up the point, Phil. And that's it. It's the thing that's it's kind of when I watched the movie on the big screen was when like he goes to the secret base of the resistance underwater, and it's the weather's horrible and it's raining badly in the middle of the ocean, and he just jumps out, and then the next scene he's just sitting there like it was just a bunch of nothing. It's like, how the hell did he get to this submarine when he's by himself, and we just literally saw him jump out of a fucking helicopter in the middle of a storm, and then all of a sudden the very next scene he's dry and he's talking to everyone in the submarine as if he just knocked on a door and they let him in and he gave the secret password.
Well, that was literally the point of No Return, where I knew that this movie was beyond salvation. Ha ha ha.
Zing.
I just that's when
you know. Shout. How dare he?
Well, that's when you know McGee is directing this movie. This is the guy who had Lucy Liu attached to Demi Moore's car hood in Charlie's Angels 2, let go of it, and then fly 50 feet across the street, crash into a window, and then down an escalator, and then she turns up in the next scene perfectly unharmed. That's McGee. That's how he thinks. He thinks human beings can do these things. He thinks Christian Bale can swim down in... black and find a submarine and get on board it.
I think McGee was confused. I think for that scene he thought he was Batman, and he thought, like, well, Batman will just get one of his devices and he'll totally get in there. I mean, just duh. And then he realized, like, oh wait, he's John Connor, he's not Batman.
If he thought he was Batman, he would have thrown in a rubber shark, surely, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah,
anyway,
it was
yes. But anyway, it was just very, very disappointing. I mean, it didn't even do what I thought it would do on the tin. Is it that hard to have 2 hours of humans fighting endoskeletons? Apparently it is, because, you know, I loved the opening scene. Well, not the opening scene. I mean, the thing after the pointless bullshit with Marcus. I mean, the stuff, we did the first attack. I loved, I know. And that's another thing. I don't understand why we should care. Well, no, that's the main thing. Just like Matrix, the Matrix sequels, where the whole point of the movie is the machines are coming to kill Zion, and for it to work, you need to care about the people in Zion, and I didn't. I don't care about these human beings. I don't care about a single one of them. I suppose I half care about Kyle Reese, but the only reason I do is because I know his greater destiny and what he has to do. And, you know, if he doesn't get to time travel and go back to 1984, then nothing in those movies will ever happen. And all we'll be left with is McGee's movies. And my God, that can't be allowed to happen, dude.
It makes no sense. Literally, we just saw Star Trek where they put it out on the table and they said, this is an alternate timeline. So no one's going to just disappear. There's two Spocks. It's not like if young Spock dies, old Spock disappears. It's just like he's dead. You know, The Quinto Spock is gone. It's just Spock Prime. That's what this thing makes no sense, because John Connor's like, I have to save Kyle Reese because then I won't be able to send him back in time and I won't exist. That makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, that is like the biggest plot hole. I mean, that makes no fucking sense whatsoever. And say what you will about the writing of Star Trek, but they clearly put all their shit together. Those four writers, including, you know, Abrams and Damon Lindelof and then K&O, were just like, all right, this has to make sense. We've got to have some kind of logic to it, and they got away with it, and it made perfect sense in the context of that movie. This, it doesn't, and they had twice as many writers on board, and they just were just like, who cares?
We always go back to this, but Back to the Future 2, they cut out that scene where old Biff vanishes.
Yes.
Because they knew it made no fucking sense.
Right. Well, I mean, it's just the logic, the rules they set up. It worked in Back to the Future because he's stuck in the past, and, you know, I mean, I bought it. It still works now, but, like, theoretically, Marty could have just fucked his mom, and then she wouldn't have been his mom because he's from another timeline. So, you know, if we're going to be honest here.
I've been pushing that agenda for a long time.
I'm just saying, it's true. I'm saying, you know.
You want Leah Thompson, a big steamy sex scene. You've been pushing that for a while, but that's okay. It's understandable. She's very attractive in those movies.
Did you not see her in Howard the Duck? I mean, it would be no worse than her fucking that midget duck. It would be no worse than that, my friend. You know.
Did she actually sing the theme song at the end? Was that her singing that?
I don't believe that. I think I'm gonna say yes, it was. I'm gonna go.
Well, I have
a lot of hair crimping. That's all I remember.
And Jeffrey Jones. Yeah.
And a keytar.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Keytar.
Oh. That's when we knew George Lucas was insane. Like, at the time, everyone says, like, oh, it was the prequels. Like, no. Howard the Duck. Those three words. Yeah. We knew it was over. The man was out of his mind. And to be fair, he is diabetic. So, like, when you have too much sugar, you just go nuts. I got relatives who are diabetic, and they just go fucking flip when they eat too much sugar. I think George Lucas was probably having a diabetic fit when he pitched that movie.
Well, we'll ask him.
Yeah.
Anyway, where was I? So I was saying, yeah, I liked the opening attack, and obviously I liked, you know, sneaking into Skynet and fighting the robots there, because that's what we all thought Terminator 4 would be anyway. But in between all that, for the most part, they're just fighting these robotic arms, like, you know, straight out of the Matrix, like the Sentinels. And I'm thinking, endoskeletons, where are you? I mean, I was looking forward to seeing the shit Terminators with the rubber skin, who we'd seen
the
pictures
of. That's right, and they're not in the movie.
See them? Where were they? I'm glad it's not just me. I thought I'd blinked and missed them.
There's a lot of stuff that's not in the movie. There's an image of Helena Bonham Carter, excuse me, and we see underneath that she's a Terminator, and that's not in the movie whatsoever. That image is on the internet, and there's the scene, of course, at the end of the first teaser where a big Terminator sneaks up behind Bale. That's not in the movie. I mean, there's tons of shit that's not in the movie.
Wow. Just,
you know.
Can
I say one more thing? I have to defend Christian Bale. Everyone says, like, oh, he gave the Batman voice in Terminator. That's bullshit. People are just trying to – that is literally – fanboys turning against Bale and finding the just most minor retarded arguments they can think up. He talks a Batman in a Terminator salvation. He totally does not. That is such bullshit. I have to defend Bale on that one. That's horseshit.
No, I thought Bale was fine. I thought they were all fine. There wasn't a performance in the movie where I was going, God, you stick out. They were all fine.
Exactly.
It was just bad writing. Blame the writers. They're not likable characters. And of course, it's been said by everybody, if John Connor was just a voice on the radio that would give him this mythic, st- status among the Resistance, then that would make the character really work. And maybe we could meet him at the end, but, you know, that's not the way it was to be. Anyway, it's, you know, obviously, I mean, I think we're all agreed on this. There isn't going to be a fifth one.
No way.
And no one's excited about a fifth one. I mean, it's the end, and...
It's not even that, dude. It's not even about people being excited. It's the fact that it's not making money. That's the problem. It's a flop. I'm sorry, there's another movie that's being called the first flop of the summer, which we'll get to in a second. But actually, Terminator's the first flop of the summer. That flick was made for well over $200 million. It ain't even going to get close to that domestically. International numbers are not going to save it. I mean, it's dead.
No. You should have seen the reaction of my audience when we came out. Well, I mean non-reaction. There was literally no sound during the entire movie. Now, usually that's a good thing because it means no one's, you know...
Talking.
Being a jackass, talking. Yeah. But in this case, I was thinking, it's because this movie is so vapid and just empty that no one cares or can get excited. Everyone's checked out. It's, you know, we're 10 minutes into the movie and everybody has checked out and nobody cares. And we all just stumbled out of the theater and thought, well, Transformers... Can't wait for that, you know, that's what it was. Nobody cares. No one's going to see this movie a second. I'm not going to get the DVD. I don't even think I'm going to see this.
Now, Phil, I told you, just rent the fucking DVD or Blu-ray and you'll be fine seeing it at home. Why didn't you listen to me? That's our relationship. You don't listen to me. You just don't listen. You used to listen all the time, and now you just don't anymore.
shut up. I'll do what I want.
I'm the man in this relationship, goddammit. I'll do what I want to do.
Maybe if you'd give me a fucking digital copy of Up and send it over to me, maybe then I'd listen to you, but no.
No, I can't.
No, you've
only if you agree to pay his RIAA legal fees if he does that. So.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'll have
MPAA,
to,
I think, or whatever.
Then I'll have to literally, like, just move to the UK so they can't find me. But so now that speaking of other movies, Ed, you saw a movie this weekend as well. Care to give us your thoughts?
As I mentioned in my opening about the glory that is Zach Galifianakis's beard, I saw The Hangover on Friday. It was nearly sold out. Movie was hilarious. I don't know if I necessarily would see it again, but it was very, very good. It's very much Zach Galifianakis's movie. Ed Helms was fantastic. Bradley Cooper was good. Then there's the other guy who I can't remember, but it was very, very good comedy. It was very, very funny. And the audience I was in loved the hell out of it. The best part really is at the end where they go through the photos of what they took. And, you'd have to see it to believe it. And it was very surprising when I saw the movie that they did not show the Bruno trailer. I was expecting that they did not. They did, however, show a trailer for a movie called The Goods. This is with Jeremy Piven as a car salesman. And I thought the trailer was very, very good. It's supposed to come out in August, and
he's playing Ari Gold. Is that's the question?
Sort of that way, but this time he's got sideburns and he's got the short sleeve dress shirt on. It kind of reminds me of Nick Naylor from Thank You for Smoking, and that this guy could sell anything. And this time he's to sell cars during 4th of July weekend. The vibe of almost kind of remind me of just in the batshit happenings of used cars. I can't say it would be any good like used cars, but, you know, this could be, like I said, I thought the trailer was very, very good. Now, whether or not the movie itself will be any good, I don't know. But, you know, it's Will Ferrell, Adam McKay's production company is involved in it, Gary Sanchez Productions, and, you know, I think there's some great promise with that. But like I said, The Hangover, fantastic. I really wish they didn't spoil the Mike Tyson singing in
the air. I was going to ask you about that. How does that play to a packed audience? I was curious.
Well, people were enjoying it, but I can tell you, in the scene where they're calling Ed Helms out from the house, they used some different language in the movie, which made it even funnier. Because
nice.
It was like, you know, you'd have to see the movie. And then also the bit where Zach Galifianakis is in his underwear. Once again, they changed some things for the movie that made it even weirder. And then...
They basically shot some stuff just for TV. Like,
yeah,
just,
because
great. That's great, actually. That's a great surprise when you see that.
Yeah, and then obviously when he's coming down the escalator dressed like Rain Man, I was laughing my ass off. I was just, the slow descent, he going down the escalator. And Yeah, it was great. Some big time Asian stereotyping, you know. But it was deemed hilarious, and once again continuing the trade, the trend of ugly male frontal male nudity.
I heard about
seen in. Well, forgetting Sarah Marshall wasn't too bad, but then you had Walk Hard, and then Observe and Report. So it wasn't as dark as Observe and Report. I mean, these aren't really the most likable people, but it was good fun. And
but they have a baby, so you have to like them.
Well, they had a baby, and then oddly enough, Heather Graham is in this, and she looks surprisingly the same. She's in, she was fine. Samantha Bee is in the movie as Ed Helms' fiance.
Yeah, she is in the
movie.
A lot of
Daily Show people are in this. Rob Riggle, once again, he was fantastic as the Vegas cop. I just saw Step Brothers earlier in the week. He was fantastic in that and in his bit part. And then, it was great. You know, Todd, I like this a lot better than Old School. And, anything's better than Starsky and Hutch. And then Todd Phillips continuing his trend of having a little cameo. He's in the – has a little non-speaking cameo in the movie also. So looking very 70s porn.
That's awesome, actually. So that's good. I'm going to see it if I get the chance. I mean, it's funny because going into the summer, everyone, all the major box office analysts had preordained this is going to be the surprise hit. But it's not a surprise anymore. I mean, everyone was saying, like, this is going to be a sleeper hit. It's going to be a surprise to everyone. But, you know, how's it a surprise when we know beforehand it's going to be big, you know?
Right.
I
will say going back to Bradley Cooper, I mean, he was fantastic in this. I remember him also being the bad guy from Wedding Crashers.
Mm-hmm.
There was some speculation this guy could be the next Green Lantern. I don't know. But I think he's very good. I mean, I remember mainly from the first thing I remember was the first season of Alias, which was the only season of Alias I've watched through and through. And he was great in that. Hopefully this will lead to that for him to do other things. But like I said, this will be Zach Galifianakis' movie. Unfortunately for Zach Galifianakis, that guy's going to be in G-Force. He's basically David Cross from Alvin and the Chipmunks. I assume he just wanted to get some beer money.
Or beard money, beard money.
Well, no, he has plenty of beard money.
Well, I mean, you know, got to keep that thing trimmed, you know. That's a thick beard.
There was a great bit from his comedy special way back when about that, and he was like saying, give me the young Santa Claus. Give me the sea cat. Give me the rapist. And then it was like, and then he continued on, but...
That's funny.
Yeah, so he was fantastic in it. And like I said, it's his movie, so...
It's funny, because you see the trailer and you think it would be his movie. And I saw him in the most recent Funny or Die with Natalie Portman. Is that what it's called, those videos that they do? So you know what I'm talking about?
Well, it's called Funny or Die, but
Funny
I
or Die,
see that
thank you.
Video.
Very fun. It's very funny. I mean, you wouldn't die, obviously, but I'd laughed a lot at it. But... all right, so Hangover, that's great, doing amazing business. I guess I'm curious to see how it's going to hold next weekend. It's going to make a fortune, obviously, already has. And you know that movie was made for like $10, and it's already made $43 million. So, Warner Brothers and Legendary are already in the bank. And I guess that explains why they went ahead and tried to do a sequel, which you've seen it, Ed. How the fuck do you do a sequel to this movie in your mind?
There's no way. The story ends on its own. I don't know how they could top it, especially because – I don't know what else there is other than the bachelor party. You know, that's about it. I don't know what they could do beyond that. I don't know of any other, gathering like that. I mean, there's no reason to do it. Obviously, if they do it, I don't know how they're going to top this. I mean, that's like, talk about Anchorman 2. I don't know what they're going to do to go beyond what they've already done.
Don't get me started on Anchorman 2. But you did anyway. That's a flick that I am. Boy, when I first saw Anchorman, I actually didn't like it because all the TV spots gave away every joke for the most part, and it grew on me. I saw it again, and it started to like, wow, this is a great movie, and I love the movie now. But it's one of those things where you go. I don't know. It's kind of like the way I feel about the Arrested Development movie. It's like we should be thankful we got what we got, and I'd be half curious to see what they could think up to see where these characters are now, but at the same time, there's that dangerous kind of tiptoeing between turning from Ghostbusters to Ghostbusters 2,
Right.
That's the fear.
Especially because I don't know what could be done how is an 80s newsman different from a 70s newsman? The only thing I heard someone suggest was that have John C. Reilly show up as a consumer advocate reporter. Which
no,
I thought was a
no, no, idea. I've got it. John C. Reilly should play Ted Turner, and they work for CNN. in 1980. There's the movie right there, dude. You know, that'd be awesome. You know, and then someone can play Roger.
Ten Commandments's got two.
Go ahead.
Sorry,
go ahead.
I was thinking Anchorman 2's got two problems. Number one is expectation now.
Oh, yeah.
You tell me they're going to make it, and there are a lot of fans of that movie in the UK. Really. I went into it not knowing a single joke. I just went in knowing it was going to be funny, and my God, was it funny. The true test of any comedy. If I see a comedy once and laugh my arse off, I'm not going to say there and then that it's a great comedy, because I need to see it a second and a third time to know whether the jokes hold up. Like we were talking about the Shrek movies last week, the jokes don't hold up. In Anchorman, every time those lines just slay me. But, you know, expectation, you know, everyone's going to be expected to be a laugh riot. Two, I mean, you know, they make those movies, I think, 80% improv. I'm not sure about the statistics, but it really is.
I think the story with that was they shot it, and the first cut of the movie was, and someone will have to correct me on this, maybe you know, Ed, but the first cut of the movie was, in fact, Wake Up Ron Burgundy, and it previewed so horribly, they said, let's go back and really restructure the whole movie. They went back and did tons of reshoots, and then it became the movie it is now. That's what I heard was the story.
Not that – I had never heard of that, and I am familiar with Wake Up Ron Burgundy because I have that DVD. Wake Up Ron Burgundy was a companion sort of film, basically consisting of cut footage and plot lines from Anchorman. I think Anchorman was originally that. They had plot lines they were thinking of doing within the movie, and that just became Wake Up Ron Burgundy. And Wake Up Ron Burgundy is not that good, but there are a couple of good moments where Brick comes to his senses, and then they say, the captain's back. And it involved this whole weird bank robbery angle.
Yeah, with Maya Rudolph, yeah.
I think it was just completely separate plot lines that were considered to be in the movie. But they just made a 40-minute film out of all this cut footage.
So, it's longer than that. I believe it's full length, sir.
Perhaps. I'd have to dig out the DVD, although I do remember one other funny bit where Steven Root played one of the weekend news reporters looking completely panicked, staring at the camera. So that was good. But at least Will Ferrell even admitted that the movie itself, you know, there's a certain guarantee that the possibility of failure here. So
it is, but what is encouraging is that all of the key principles are in. I mean, they've said, like, we're in. I mean, it's Ferrell, McKay, presumably Apatow, which I don't know how much of a hand he had in the first movie.
Well, he produced it, but even, you know who else produced that movie? David O. Russell, I kid you not.
Really?
Yeah.
I learned something today.
Look at the opening credits of that movie, and you'll see his name.
Did not know that, but I mean, it's so encouraging that you got, like, you know, Steve Carell's a big star now, and I think it's safe to say call him a star. He wants to come back, and, you know, that's, I mean, who's the guy who played a coach? I mean,
David Keck.
Yeah, thank you. Excuse me. I mean, like, it's not going to be hard to get him to come back. I don't say that meanly, but, you know.
Right.
Fred Willard and everyone.
Paul Rudd is Brian Fantana.
I mean, I am looking forward to seeing these guys come back. I mean, it's encouraging that they want to come back. But they also know the fear of doing it. And, frankly, leading into our next story is a little subtle, not so subtle segue, is maybe Will Ferrell will do it because he needs to do a hit because I saw Land of the Lost yesterday, ladies and gentlemen, which has been labeled...
Are you lost?
Yeah, exactly, sadly. And, you know, it's being labeled as the first flop of the summer, which, as we said earlier, that would probably be Terminator Salvation. I don't think there's going to be much argument on that one. But this is the second flop of the summer, and boy, is it deserving, because this is a terrible fucking movie. Now, I went in with lowered expectations, because the TV spots and the trailer were just plain not funny. Now, I watched the show as a kid, so I do know my way around the, quote, mythology of Land of the Lost. And by Land of the Lost, I mean the original 70s show, not that early 90s Disney-produced piece of shit show, Land of the Lost, if you'll remember, with the terrible theme song and whatnot.
I remember a Jeep. That's all I remember.
Right. But
is that why you went to see it, Jamie? Just because you remembered the show?
No, I went in because... the reviews I read from some people who we read, like, you know, film critics and whatnot, commentators, they were saying, like, we went in – okay, they basically – I'm paraphrasing. He goes, I went in with lowered expectations, and I wound up liking it. Well, I thought, you know what, maybe that's the case. Maybe I'll – you know what, I'm going to go in too. I'm going to go in low expectations, and maybe I'll enjoy it. And I went in pretty low, but, man, that – it's – It's pretty fucking terrible. I mean, it was a strike shoot, and it feels it. Like, there's just, at times, it literally was like, let's roll the camera, and you guys can ad-lib stuff, because we don't have a script. We can't, oh my god, it's remarkable how bad this movie is. It's further proof that CGI comedy shouldn't happen. Just because you have a Ghostbusters, which is an effects-filled movie that happens to be also a comedy with ad-libbing and improv-ing, doesn't mean it works for every movie. You know, and this, oh my god, I can't just, ask me away questions of what I did or didn't like, because I'm flabbergasted, because this movie was so unfunny. And, like, the worst part was a couple of kids were, I don't know, probably 15, 16 years old, maybe four of them, and they were in the front row, and as the movie ended, I heard them clap, and I really was going to, I felt like going down there and smacking them and weeping for the future of our youth, because that ain't a movie to fucking clap at the end. Like, Semi-Pro was better than this movie, in my opinion, and I hated Semi-Pro.
Wow. Yeah.
Blades of Glory.
I have not seen Blades of Glory. I am not a big.
I did see Blades of Glory. That is not good. The only reason I saw it at the time was that the power had gone out in my building for about 2 days, and I needed to get outside. And it was that brief period where John Heder was getting work. And
The
only thing that cracked me up in that movie was that because Heder was, I recognized what he was trying to do. He was aping an ice skater, and I don't even know about ice skating, but I know about this, an ice skater by the name of Johnny Weir, who is known for very ridiculous, and this is ice skating what I'm talking about here, ridiculous outfits with a lot of plumage. But yeah, that was not good.
I guess the best thing to do is try and quantify its badness in relation to your entire movie-going life, Jamie Williams. I mean, how bad is it compared to the worst movies you've ever seen? And you have seen, by your own admission, Battlefield Earth in the theater.
Battlefield Earth benefits from being so bad it's good. Like, you can entertain like that. I mean, some people are saying like Land of the Lost is going to be a real stoner movie in the future. It's going to find its audience through potheads, which I agree it will. But you know, I don't have to be stoned to enjoy Battlefield Earth. I'd have to be really wasted out of my mind to enjoy Land of the Lost.
Mm. Is there a movie we can compare it to that it kind of feels like?
Jane, Silent Bob, Strike Back?
Ooh.
No.
I don't think it's that bad. Hey, I will say, Jay and Bob had some funny stuff in it. I mean, like, them going to the movie studio and Diedrich Meyer?
Baker, I think.
Thank you. Diedrich Baker as the security guard, you know, who wants them to, like, you know, blow each other and go, oh, what a lovely tea party. That's great. That's a great line. You know, I'm saying like the whole basis of the movie is that one line. But I mean, like, there's some funny stuff in Jay and Bob, and that's an inside movie. At least that film has the excuse of saying like, well, you have to be a hardcore fan to really appreciate it. I get that. I don't really know if there's much to.
But this is like an overblown CGI.
This movie is so bad. There is literally a scene where Will Ferrell is playing on a little banjo guitar. And he's playing the Land of the Lost theme. He plays the
song. Wow, that's pretty meta right there.
Yeah, he plays the song because he's like, Marsh, you know, he's trying to, like, cheer everyone up. And he's just like, I came up with a song about what we've been going through right now. That's how bad it is.
How is Danny McBride in the movie?
He's okay, but he's being Danny McBride. I mean, I love the guy, and he's still on everyone's good graces. I don't think he was terrible, but, you know, It's not like Pineapple Express or Tropic Thunder where he stole the show. He's serviceable. He's fine. But man, this is going to go down as Will Ferrell's disaster, not Danny McBride. It's not his fault whatsoever. He did what was asked upon him, and at the time, you know, for whatever the scene called for.
I'm trying to think of other TV show adaptations here that were turned into out-and-out comedies. I do remember I hated Starsky and Hutch.
At least that movie was relevant. At least it was trying to be tongue-in-cheek, though. I'll give the movie that.
It almost seems like Land of the Lost was meant to be made back in 98, when there was that time where a lot of old TV shows were getting made into films. I can go through the list. McHale's Navy, Sergeant Bilko, Leave It to Beaver, the Brady
Beverly
Bunch
Hill
movie.
Billies.
Beverly Hillbillies, Flintstones, if that counts.
Flintstones, all sorts of crap. And
Little Rascals.
Little Rascals.
Yeah, and there was that time where that was going on, and
Amos and Andy.
That too, and
no, that wasn't when I was joking. There's
Perfect gotcha. Strangers, Beretta, you know, and Family Matters, but anyway.
There wasn't a Family Matters movie yet.
I'm surprised there hasn't been.
Give it time, sir. It'll say like starring Academy Award winner Jamie Foxx as Urkel.
Yes. And yeah, it seems like one of those overblown, you know, mid to late 90s, you know, ultra expensive comedies that just hit, you know, fails. I mean, you hear about these from time to time. It was like that with, I think, Evan Almighty, and I can think of like all these really overblown, you know, film movies like that, you know, or even like Wild Wild West. Although
I don't think this is the disaster of a Wild Wild West. It's pretty close though.
Okay.
We were talking about that movie Evolution.
Yeah, you were.
That too. Well, that's a great example. That's a great example, actually.
That's Ghostbusters 3.
Well, I was just trying to, and I saw that in the theater. I was trying to watch a, you know, a bit of it. I was at some restaurant and they were playing it. That movie is horrendously unfunny. It's shocking how unfunny that movie is. You know,
probably
and it's
the
an
best
apprehend.
Argument for Ghostbusters 3 not getting made earlier at that time. You know.
Well, I mean, it's kind of the same. It's the same argument you said about Terminator Salvation. It should have been made 10 years ago. I mean, you think about like a lot of these movies should have come out in the summer of 1999, not the summer of 2009, and it would have been huge. You know,
even for Terminator 4, 10 years ago would have been pushing because Arnold would have been 52 at the time. I think it would have had to have been the early 90s or mid 90s at the latest, probably like right around True Lies. I'm of the mind that if you're going to do a sequel in a movie, you got to have a time limit. You should not be doing sequels, you know, more than maybe 5-6 years, and that's pushing it.
Yeah.
Now, granted, you could have exceptions. I mean, it happened with Rambo and Rocky Balboa, and then I was I tried watching The Color of Money, which is a movie that takes place 25 years after The Hustler, but that's on the character.
Don't forget Toy Story 3.
Yeah.
Well, that's animated. That's different.
That's
a cop-out answer. Come on.
Well, I mean, unless you're going to do, like, an animated, like, Color of Money, I mean, it'd be a different movie.
Yes, but there needs to be a time limit on these types of sequels. You can't, if you've done like a movie and it's like 15, 20 years after the last one, you're pretty much and you have the same people involved, it's pretty much going to be horrendously bad.
Yeah.
And we've seen this before.
I have to admit, I am a fan of Psycho 2.
There's a lot of people who like Psycho 2. There's video on YouTube of Siskel and Ebert reviewing it, and I believe they both gave it a good review. They actually said, look, it's actually not terrible. I mean, like, they shouldn't have made a sequel, but it's not bad, actually. It was the reception. It's funny how people just rewrite history all the time. Like, there's old reviews of Return of the Jedi when it came out, and people said it's the best Star Wars of all three. And everyone says, like, oh, at the time, everyone said Empire was the best. Like, nope, there's footage. I saw it. They said, no, Jedi's the best one.
It's funny you mention reviews, because I want to bring up something else I've come across.
Let's segue into that segment.
Yeah, exactly. I was listening to another film podcast called The Flickcast, which is a recent upstart podcast. Now, I was listening to these guys, listening to their latest episode. One of the people involved, and I don't remember the guy's name, doesn't matter, he proceeded to say that Up was the worst Pixar movie and said it was schmaltzy and manipulative. This is the same guy who also said he didn't like Unbreakable because Bruce Willis was not being Bruce Willis. Now, I think that the jig was up.
Wow, really?
The jig was up because the guy recommended Smallville as a DVD thing to watch for one episode. But here's the thing I wanted to bring up.
I'm sorry, that's just funny.
You know, the fact is, we all have our particular critics.
True.
Now, obviously, a critic should not agree with everything you believe. There are going to be times when there's going to be disagreement.
Absolutely.
But what if you deal with a situation where you have a favorite critic or someone you do listen to says something so egregious? I mean, can you accept anything that is said afterwards? I mean, let me put it to the most extreme example. It's like saying having a normal, rational person, you know, who's a good guy, you know, whatnot, but out of nowhere just says to you, 9/11 was an inside job and completely believes that. That pretty much just derails anything you can, you know, say from this person ever again. Can you accept a critic who says something that outrageous and listen to him ever again?
Yes.
How the hell do you dislike Up? I could believe you could say it's not your cup of tea. Now, I mean, we all have films and genres that are like that, but you say Up was the worst Pixar movie, worse than Cars? That doesn't make any sense. You might as well just say, you know, Gravity, you know, Up is down, black is white, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. You get the idea what I'm saying. I mean, could you ever accept a critic of your choice to say something like that, or do you just write them off entirely? To me, I'm done listening to that podcast. There's no reason, because anything the guy says is, of no use. There's no reason to listen to this person.
I think of it as, how should I put it? It is it's just a difference of opinion. If they can present a real case. See, that's the difference, though. This guy you're referring to probably didn't present, and I didn't listen to it, so I'm not going to shun the guy because I don't know. But it sounds like he did not come up with a case. He just made these statements, and that was kind of it. He didn't actually have anything to, have a presentation, how he came to that point of view.
Oh, yeah, there was no argument.
Yeah. See, with Roger, I love Roger Ebert. I used to, as a kid, I used to stay up late at 1 a.m. on a Saturday morning, or technically Friday night, to watch Siskel and Ebert at the movies. And I used to want to watch what their opinions were. And as a kid, I loved Independence Day. Leading up to its release, I was excited about that movie. And they hated it.
Right.
And I thought, I'm not listening. They're insane. I look back and I go, they're pretty much dead on about that movie.
Right.
But there's also the case where, Roger Ebert hated Full Metal Jacket. And I agreed with him. I am not a Full Metal Jacket fan. I have tried to enjoy that movie so much. And for me, personally, on that movie, I think it falls apart after the first half hour because I'm so invested in the story of these guys and training and how these guys go apeshit nuts. And then to suddenly, I thought D'Onofrio was a very – you think the movie's D'Onofrio's, and it's so compelling, and him and Arlie Emery, and then you have Matthew Modine kind of as a supporting character, and then to suddenly say, no, it's really Matthew Modine's story, I wasn't as into Matthew Modine. I wanted to see the Vincent D'Onofrio story, the Gomer Pyle story, if you will, which that's another big-budget TV show that I'm sure we'll see on the big screen in a couple of years. But
right.
That I think that was, as my memory serves me correctly, that was Ebert's argument, and that's the way I felt. And I only watched his review after I saw the movie. So I agree with him. I was like, I'm not into Full Metal Jacket. And also his coming off Platoon, which was it painted a line on Vietnam that hadn't been seen before up to that time.
Right.
And it was just 6 months too late. Kubrick missed it completely. That's the way I felt. But then you look at more recent reviews where Ebert gives good reviews. He hated Star Trek, or he didn't hate Star Trek. He just didn't like it. And he gave it 2 stars out of 4. Do I think he's nuts? No, I just think he didn't care for it. It's a difference of opinion.
Yeah, but that's the thing. There's some argument here. I mean, even and like I said, you're going to disagree with the critics you enjoy, but just to say something like that about Up, I just don't understand that. That's like as Devin once said, I've tried, it's like, how could you hate Shaun of the Dead? You may not care for Shaun of the Dead just because it's not your thing. I myself am not a horror guy, but I don't go about shitting on horror movies. I just don't really watch them.
Right.
So,
so charming. It's just so fucking charming to Shaun of the Dead.
Absolutely. And I just don't know how that's possible. Now there are some bad shit reviewers out there. There are people that you automatically know their opinion isn't worth a damn. I could go down, I could
Ben
name
Lyons.
A couple of names right here. Ben Lyons, let's see.
Rex go ahead and name
Reed
him.
Is not a critic.
Does he still review?
Pete Hammond. They give him money, apparently. I don't know.
I didn't know he was still alive. I thought
he's still alive and shoplifting.
I thought he was in a cryogenic freezer right now next to Walt Disney's head.
Hey, Gene Shalit is somehow still alive.
Oh my God, he is? Wow.
Yes.
Joel Siegel.
Yeah,
Joel Siegel, God bless him. I always liked Joel Siegel, but I will go ahead and say this. Even as a kid, I thought that guy is nothing but a whore for the mouse because any time a Disney movie came out, he would give it the most ball-suckingly good reviews you could imagine. I remember seeing this. Anything that was Disney-related, he gave amazing reviews to. And it's – you know what he reviewed for? Good Morning America. What network does it air on? ABC. Who owns ABC? Disney. So – that's the way – I always liked the guy, but, he was clearly just given good reviews for the mouse. Although, I will say the one time he earned my respect when I saw his list of his top 10 favorite horror movies of all time, and he put Dawn of the Dead at number one. I was like, you know what? It's all cool, man. I love you. It's all okay.
Right. But, yeah, there are certainly names you just know you can't go with. And, obviously, that's the thing about the internet is also that you don't, as – it's been said, it's the great equalizer. You can, anybody can be a critic. There are some people that, I'm not a critic, really. I mean, I can give an opinion, but I know I'm not a critic because I can't, there's a certain
you're
methodology
a pundit,
to it, What did you say, Phil?
You're a pundit. That's what you are.
I guess at best, you know, I'm the Mo Rock of the podcasting circuit. So actually, that sounds very bad. Actually,
I don't think that's a good thing, dude. I mean, I would say you're the Michael Ian Black. How about we say that?
Maybe. Yeah, no, anything like that, especially because it cracks me up when I would hear these things on the radio bar. They said film expert Pete Hammond. Pete Hammond is not a film expert. That guy is one of the worst reviewers in existence. And I don't even want to mention the abortion that movies became with Ben Lyons and the other guy who's the grandson of the guy who wrote Citizen Kane, Mankiewicz.
But let's be fair, I do like Mankiewicz. I watch Mankiewicz on Turner Classic Movies, and that's a case where it's not his fault. The dude's just getting a paycheck. I mean, he reviews it like he does on Turner Classic Movies. I think the problem is that it's a combination of getting Lyons and the producers. It's not Mankiewicz's problem, in my opinion. I say, shit can everyone else but keep Mankiewicz and get someone else on. I would
you
actually...
Know they should,
go ahead.
You know what they should have gotten was Robert Wolanski to play to against Mankiewicz.
There you
if
go,
they were
dude.
Gonna do that. He was good.
That guy was great, and I mean, I never like when A.O. Scott became sort of, I guess, before who was it? Michael Phelps took over, I guess, as the.
Right.
You know, I never cared for A.O. Scott. It's like, get someone else on. I'm sick of seeing Tony Scott fucking review a movie.
Yeah. You know? Then they would obviously be weird about their selections. They would have celebrities, which why would I give a
horrible.
Shit about their opinion? Fred Willard liked every movie he saw.
Yeah.
And then they had Jay Leno. Once again, why the hell is Jay Leno on this show?
At least Jay Leno would give a thumbs down, though. Let's give the man props for having some balls to say I didn't like that movie. I'll give him that. I mean, Mario Van Peebles sucked a lot. I was shocked how bad he was. I thought like he'd have a good perspective. He was terrible. Kevin Smith, not surprisingly, Kevin Smith was the best of the guest critics, in my opinion, in terms of celebrities.
Yeah. Right. I mean, then they had Stephen Hunter on, which didn't make any sense, even though that guy's a veteran critic. They had Elvis Mitchell, who I think was all right, but then I can't really trust Elvis Mitchell because he once did an interview with Tim Kring, and it was the most nonsensical thing I ever heard. But yeah, I always thought Wolanski was the best, even though I didn't really care for Roper all that much. But
The moment he came on, I liked him. I still think it's ironic that people like on the internet would be like, oh, he's such a smartass. I'm like, you're on the internet, dude. There's a lot of smartass critics out there, like, and you're getting on this dude for being a smartass. He's closer than you in terms of taste and style than you realize. I'm not saying you particularly, Adam. I'm just saying you in general. You know, excuse me. But I always liked Roper. They're trying to get a new show started up, and I haven't heard a word about it, but I'm looking forward to it if it ever happens. Because I miss Roper, damn it.
I know it kind of pissed me off when he mispronounced Borat. It really annoyed me. I don't know if he was trying to be cute, but...
he did?
You know, he called it Borat or something like that, or something very snobby and waspy. But, I just know if you get Larry King to do a review for your movie, that's a very good sign.
Oh, man. I love that every time you see like when the only review you can get on your movie in a 30-second TV spot is Larry King, you know it's shit. Because go ahead.
No, go ahead. Okay. The other great example is that, and my dad used to tell me this, was that if you saw Jeff Craig's 60-second preview, that was a sign the movie was horrendous. So, Then there'd be the thing about, you'd hear about these stories every so often of these that were just fake fictional critics. I forgot the names, but it would come up
It was Sony. Sony started it. It was summer 2001, I remember, because they gave good reviews to A Knight's Tale, which isn't in the shop because I like The Knight's Tale. But they also gave good reviews to The Animal and something else that Sony had that summer that was shit. I don't remember what it was, but we should have known the moment someone gave a glowing review to a Rob Schneider comedy that they clearly were fake.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the case in England, where there are just some critics you just immediately write off. But does that sort of thing go on over in the UK?
Well, we do have one particular newspaper critic who loves everything and just is never really never given a bad review to anything except the most excremental piece of shit and has been made fun of over here. His name escapes me right now. It happens. To me, it doesn't bother me. It's not really about the opinions for me. We live in an age where look, this weekend's a prime example. It doesn't matter what anybody tells me about Terminator Salvation. I'm going to see it. I have to see it for myself. There's occasional times when there is a movie that I have absolutely no emotional investment in seeing, Well, if everybody tells me The Hangover is shit, then I'm not going to see The Hangover, as it turns out. People are saying it's great. So immediately, it's on my list and I'm going to see it. Jamie's opinion, I trust implicitly. We very rarely disagree. And even when we do disagree, it's always great for me to disagree with him and see the movie anyway. So, you know, I will see. I know he keeps getting at me at this, and I'm sorry. I will see Pineapple Express. I will get around.
You still haven't seen that? Oh, my God. Wow.
I know if he goes again.
You know, we shouldn't cast stones because obviously it took me a year to see Wall-E. So.
True. But I will say, Phil, if there's any ringing endorsement for Pineapple Express, and I don't think you heard this, Ed, but when I saw it, I had to drive out of town to see it with my best friend. After it was over, there was an old couple who, like, they were in their 80s, and they were sitting there the whole movie, and the perfect idea of, like, how good this movie is you heard a little old lady say after they were walking out of the theater, "I liked it!" And her husband goes, "That was the stupidest movie I ever saw." Come on, Phil. I mean, an old lady liked it. I mean, you know, she was probably out of her mind. And she still
reminded me of Grindhouse. Same thing happened.
Really?
There was an old woman in the theater, and she loved it.
Ugh.
Old women
are awesome. That should be the title of this podcast.
There you go. You found it. I can't come up with anything better. But as far as writing off critics, the only reason I write off a critic in this country is because I don't like their criticism. I don't like the way they, you know, review the movie. You know, if it's enjoyable to read, even if I completely disagree and think they're insane, then as long as I enjoy their writing, I'm going to keep reading them. It's just the way it is. I'll give you a prime example of a movie which I know a lot of people hate, and I wish I could educate them and make them understand how great the movie is.
Okay.
And you might hate it as well. Starship Troopers. You might hate that movie. I'm not sure how you feel about it, but I know a lot of people think it's utter, utter shit. I wish I could make people understand how great I think it is and how smart I think Starship Troopers is. The first one, of course. I'm not talking about the DVD sequel thing. But, you know, that's diversity. That's what makes this world so wonderful.
I like Starship Troopers. I mean, it was no RoboCop or Total Recall, but I enjoyed it. I remember at the time people liking it. It's actually aged really well, as I recall, the effects. You know, like, Terminator 2, I actually watched that last night with the Cameron commentary, and I was amazed how well that movie had aged.
Well, what I love about it is how it well, we shouldn't really get into it, but it really does. I mean, there's a lot of subtle high school kind of cliches in there which get completely flipped on their head. Like, first of all, you see Denise Richards, and she's the hottest girl in the class, debatably. Some people do dynamite, that's true. But still, you think she's going to be the girl that he's going to have to win, but he's already got her. The other girl, you think she's going to be a douche. She turns out to be, you know, the real heart, the real girl that he should be with. And you think he's going to end up with her at the end. Then she dies, and then it gets flipped over again.
Which pissed me off. It's like he goes back to the little whore who dumped his ass, you know, at the very end. It's like, dude, what the fuck? Like, you know,
you don't know she's going to end up with her in the
actual ending. It's pretty much saying they hooked up at the end.
Okay, fair enough. You think Gary Busey is going to... Not Gary Busey.
Jake Busey.
His son. Jake Busey, thank you very much.
That would have been better. It would have been better if Gary had played the part. He's, like, trying to play a teenager.
He should have been one of the bugs or the bug queen or something. Anyway, you think he's going to be this bully who's going to be the competition the whole way through? Because the first scene he's in, they have this confrontation in the cafeteria. And then immediately they're friends. It's like, you know, he says, get in line with everybody else. And they stare at each other and then just goes, ha, 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 okay. And they shake hands and then they make friends and it's fine. There's no beating up scene at all. I mean, it's just lovely little touches like that that are just great. I mean, actually, I haven't seen the movie in a while, so there's a lot of others, but, you know, I won't go into them. But that's just the way it is. And, of course, I mean, there are so many great lines in that movie that are purposefully awful. You know, hey, I'm from Buenos Aires and I say kill them all. So bad, awful, awesome lines. I just love the movie. But I'll say, I know people hate it. But the one thing we must never do is say to somebody whose opinion we just don't understand We must never say, you just don't get it.
Yeah,
you don't understand this movie. Your opinion does not matter. Your brain is just not in sync with this picture. Right. You are not worthy of this picture. You don't understand it. I mean, that's the worst thing we can do. Other people's brains work differently. And we've all got our own personal biases as well. Whether we'd like to admit it or not, whether we know it or not, we all do have our own personal preferences. We're secretly deep down, we are going to prefer certain movies and we're going to like them probably no matter what. I think I've got to be perfectly honest with you about Star Trek. As long as it had, you know, the characters pretty much true to themselves and a lot of cool space battles and stuff, I think I probably would have liked it no matter what. Star Trek would have had to have done a lot to really go wrong for me. That's something I can admit to. And there are other things, maybe, you know, God, maybe I'd have to see it again, but maybe if I had to really look at myself, I was always going to hate Wolverine. It could do nothing thing to please me. I always thought it was a bad idea to do a prequel to Wolverine, so maybe that movie never had a chance with me. And well, maybe it is a decent movie and I don't, you know, because of my bias.
It's the same thing as X-Men 3. Everyone wrote it off as being immediately shit, and then you see the movie and it's just mediocre as hell.
Right.
And lazy. And layered. And lazy. So, I mean, you know.
The opposite occurred with Juno, because and that happens with any indie flick that gets hyped up way too much. The expectations are raised so high. I mean, it happened with Juno. It happened with Little Miss Sunshine.
Yep.
It happens with any small indie flick like that.
Slumdog Millionaire. We just had it. I mean, you know, I guarantee you there's going to be people who I know who are going to say, like, oh, yeah, it won all those awards, and I didn't like it. You know, I mean, I remember when Chicago won Best Picture, and then I talked to people afterwards, and they were just like, that movie won Best Picture over Lord of the Rings and The Pianist and
the greatest example of that was when Crash won. I have a long-standing policy of not giving a shit about awards because there's been numerous times in Academy history where things were awarded that shouldn't have. And it really happens with Best Actor where they don't give it for a particular role, but they give it as a gimme for some inferior role. And you know, you can cite all the examples you want. You know, there are many throughout the years. I mean, you know, the great example of that was Goodfellas in 1990. Instead, it was Dances with Wolves. Someone argue about
I disagree.
One in 94.
Well, I disagree. I disagree on
I don't
that.
Think
I mean,
that would have happened.
Well, you know. In regards to Scorsese, I said this on the Chud Forum like a couple years ago, and a couple people backed me up on the statement. I said Scorsese has directed so many movies between Goodfellas and The Departed, and he was nominated, and they never gave it to him because they thought, like, I'd rather get it with someone else or the politics backed another director. Right. But the thing is, though, if he was going to win for a, quote, Oscar-bait movie, it was going to be The Aviator, and they didn't give it to him. And I'm not saying that it's – I love The Aviator. I'm not shitting on The Aviator. But the fact is they gave it to The Departed because they thought, you know what, this is a great movie, and he did a badass job on this film, and this is his year to win. It's not because he's never won before, which everyone wants to use that for Marty, and I think that's horseshit. That example, at least, I think I shit on that. I always have to say that every time someone wants to say, like, oh, well, Marty only won for his career. It's like, nope, he had plenty of opportunities to win for his career. He won for The Departed because it got great reviews. That was, I believe it's on Rotten Tomatoes. It's like the third best-reviewed movie of the year. It's behind only, like, Children of Men and something else as the best-reviewed movie of 2006. So, you know, it's not just because of politics on that case, I think.
Right.
But I do think, you know, I do think awards ceremonies, awards shows, and voting systems like that, those you can write off, as I think you can, as opposed to critics. And I think we can pretty much write off the Academy.
Oh, totally.
MTV Movie Awards as well.
Yeah. Did anyone watch the MTV Movie Awards? Little segue.
I didn't even know it was on.
Hell no. No. No one. But, I mean, I want to point this out, but as bad as MTV is, bitching about it and how tired and how it needs to be put down is about MTV, needs to be done. Bitching about how much MTV sucks is just as tired.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's irrelevant. We know it sucks. Exactly.
And the fact is that, obviously it's meant to be for fun, but those award shows, I mean, because obviously they show them ad nauseum. You could probably, I think you can catch it right now, in fact. But those, I mean, you know, That's not. I don't even think it would be. I don't know what audience you're supposed to cater to. I think I was listening to, oddly enough, the Flickcast. They were talking about it was the tweens.
Yeah.
Because it's like Twilight won every goddamn thing. And
but we knew it was going to. We knew it was going to, though. So
yeah, right.
who's surprised?
I'm
surprised.
That thing that happened to Heath Ledger was hilarious.
I think that's awesome. If you people don't know, what happened was during a commercial break, they said, and congratulations to Heath Ledger for winning Best Villain for The Dark Knight. In the back of my mind, I was thinking, like, they should have finished the sentence and said the award was accepted by Robert Pattinson, who had seen The Dark Knight but wasn't in it. You know, I mean, come on. We know half these people aren't going to have real careers. They just vote for whoever's cute, quote-unquote, yep. each year. I'm sure next year, like, where I guarantee a year from now, everyone's going to
be New Moon. That'll be the winner.
It'll be New Moon, and then people will bitch that Star Trek should have won. You know, it's like, I can't believe. I'm telling you, dude. I mean, someone's going to bitch about that. It's
someone
like,
actually gives a shit about the MTV Movie Awards? That's unbelievable.
I watched it at a pure boredom. I wasn't, but as I said on Twitter and a couple other forums, I was like, obviously Twilight's going to win everything, so it's not – it's just like –
And the Twilight fans give a shit.
Apparently, I don't know. I mean, no one kind of shit on me for that remark, but I've never met a Twilight fan, so, you know.
Yeah,
again, my feeling on Twilight, I've said this before, it goes back to our thing about film criticism. I know those books are not my cup of tea. I know I'm not going to like that movie. I'm not going to waste my time, and I'm not going to criticize it because I haven't seen it anyway. So what's the point?
Right.
Why waste my time? I don't care. You know.
I think David Slade is trying to bring it down from the inside. I think he's got a master plan going
hoping
on there.
If it's – hey, you know what? That guy made Hard Candy. That movie was brilliant. So, I mean, I'm all for David Slade getting work so he can make projects that he really wants to do. So I'm all for that dude getting his shot.
I agree. He's going to
– Go ahead.
How did you maintain your sanity while watching the MTV Movie Award? That – oh, God. I'd be like George C. Scott in I think it was Hardcore, be yelling at the screen, "Turn it off! Turn it off!" You know, so that's I don't know how you could do it.
Next to piles of money and beautiful women.
Oh, there you go.
That's a Simpsons reference, folks, because we always talk about the Simpsons here in one degree or another. Back to the show.
Who are we going to talk about next?
I don't know. I think we're just about – we're well over an hour into this podcast, so if anyone's got anything else – it's funny because we've talked about no news items in the entire week because that gives you an idea. Nothing really happened this week except for
right. –
did anything happen? There's a rumor about Brian Blessed maybe being in Thor, which, you know, okay, great. I'm not really following that production much, but Phil, you're British. Do you have any opinion on that?
Well, folks, actually, back when we did this Movie Moan as a live show, we had a friend, Darren Seeley. If you're out there listening, hi, Darren, we love you. He called in, and we were talking about Thor, and he said, Phil, I've got a couple of words for you. Brian Blessed as Odin. And I got all excited. You know, I was joking. I was saying, yeah, that'll be fantastic. I can't wait to see Thor and Loki battle each other on a big turntable with spikes, obviously making reference to Flash Gordon, the scene in Flash Gordon where he plays Vultan, King of the Hawkman. He says, give me the remote control! And, you know, he tries to tip Timothy Dalton over the edge. And I was thinking, you know, yeah, that would be hilarious. And look, I'm game to see Brian Blessed in anything. The man is a force of nature. There is nothing on earth like Brian Blessed. But, as far as I can tell, Thor is not supposed to be Flash Gordon. This is not supposed to be campy fun. This is supposed to be big, epic, dramatic. And I really don't think I'm going to be able to take Brian Blessed as Odin seriously in dramatic scenes. So that's, you know, if it's true, I'll give it a shot, obviously. I'm not going to condone it immediately, but I think it's
well,
I'm going to have a hard time.
Well, I mean, you know,
so, you know, I really hope.
And if and for you folks, you know, if you want to see a campy Thor, check out the Return of the Incredible Hulk TV movie. You get it right there.
That's right.
It's totally there. And while we're at it, I mean, you could arguably, you know, a Daredevil that's probably around the same caliber of the Ben Affleck film is in the Trial of the Incredible Hulk. So, I mean, there you go.
What about Adventures in Babysitting?
That's right. I forgot about that. So that was my thing. That was my thing at the time. I wrote an article for ScreenRant back in my ScreenRant days, and I was saying, like, the only thing people know about Thor, the general public, is that he has a big goddamn hammer and that he was in Adventures in Babysitting. That's about the only thing people know about.
He's got wings on his helmet. That's about it.
That's true, that he does have that, but it's, you know, that's those three things right there, that's all people know about. So in many ways, that movie has a lot in its, it doesn't have that, yeah, there you go, so.
I think people
well, better a Thor movie than a Namor movie, that's all I can say, so.
Oh, God.
Oh,
who would play Namor is the question, you know.
Oh, my God, would get a lot of people uncomfortable. I think a lot of people would discover themselves if they watched that movie.
Discover. But, that's the movie. That's the movie McGee will do now as Namor.
Jesus. In terms of news, another remake, unnecessary remake. I mean, it's hard to get upset about this, but I think this one is very offensive. That there's the possibility of remaking Commando. I want to tell you, there will be riots in the streets. You know, there will be revolution if that movie gets made. That you can't recapture lightning in a bottle. There's no way you could, capture the glory that is Commando. Now, I had the fortune to see it on the big screen recently, and man, wow, was it glorious! Oh my God!
Now, did you see the uncut version with the dismemberment in the tool shed scene?
That's a regular scene. It was the regular rated R cut.
Oh,
the director was there too.
Nice.
It's always
been chopped to shit in the UK.
Yeah, no, that's a rated R scene. This wasn't see an unrated cut. So, but like, Phil, am I wrong that Vernon Wells was not getting fatter through the whole movie? I think he was.
I didn't really notice. Oh, I do know there are a couple of shots from the side of him where even as a child I knew something. That's a chubby guy there. That's just. Maybe it's because, you know, he's wearing that chainmail vest and just the way it's drooping off him. I don't know. Maybe he's thin. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe he's too thin and it's just drooping off. I never understood that. But that's the great thing about Commando. It doesn't try and set up Bennett as some physical threat and you can't wait to see the fight between Arnold and Bennett because you know Bennett could potentially kill Arnold. No, it's because the guy is a loon. And, you know, he's the whole way, you know, in that great final scene, Schwarzenegger's just taunting him. He could snap him in half in a second if he got close enough. But, you know, they're keeping well apart and he's got the knife and he's just like, he's just milking it for all it's worth, Schwarzenegger. He's saying, come on, you don't need the gun, Bennett. You don't need the gun.
Well, let's
you
be
want
fair.
To get it with the knife.
Let's be fair. If there's any Schwarzenegger movie that should be remade, I think I speak for everyone here when we should see the immortal classic Red Heat be remade.
See, I don't even remember
no
that one.
That doesn't matter. I mean, let's make it a comedy. Like, I don't know. Make
He's
him
a crazy Russian. Yeah.
No, that's a terrible movie. I remember seeing that about a year ago, and I was like, God damn, this movie's terrible. Even for the 80s, it's bad.
Yeah. Is it worse than Raw Deal?
I've not seen Raw Deal.
Yeah, neither have I, but... I do know that a lot of people say about Commando that was actually supposed to be a parody and that it was very, obviously because of what goes on, it had to have been. It seems like that was the movie that Last Action Hero tried to be because everyone seems to agree that it was meant to be a parody of all action movies.
Right. Well,
I don't think it was meant to be a parody. I think it was meant to be the action movie to end all action movies.
Well,
it was meant to be a Rambo movie.
To this day, I still think it had they supposedly... Arnold and the director, McTiernan, were saying to the studio, like, no, this needs to come out in mid-July because Jurassic Park's going to kick our ass. And they came out the week after Jurassic Park, and they were slaughtered. And to this day, they maintain, like, if they had listened to us, the movie would have been a huge hit. I actually believe them. I think it would have been a huge hit if they had made that rather wise decision. But didn't happen.
Well, it's a PG-13. There's no violence in that movie, really. Whereas in Commando, it is... I mean, that's what people...
Well,
let's be honest. When people go to see Arnold, that's what they want to see. They want to see... They want to see limbs being taken off. They want to see 200 people getting killed. They want to see 200 guys shooting at Arnold in one scene and him not being hit by a single shot, despite the fact that only some... foliage and bushes are protecting him from the onslaught of bullets. That's what makes Commando such a great watch. It's a product of its time. You can't make films like that anymore. That is a forgotten era of action movies.
And that should stay that way.
Yeah,
There's no reason to bring that back.
And that's why the Expendables might do really well, because just for that pure nostalgia.
No, well,
maybe. Just saying maybe.
There's too many people in it, so.
Well, I mean, let's be fair. I mean, Live Free or Die Hard made a lot of money, and that was playing off a lot of nostalgia, you know.
Yeah, but that movie is terrible, and there's no, and I think that probably dropped off. It obviously dropped off a lot, so.
And it was, there was no violence in that movie. It was a PG-13. It's getting back to what I'm saying. You cannot, I mean, that would make you hurl, wouldn't it, Ed? A PG-13 remake of Commando.
Oh, God.
Oh, no, that'd be, you know, obviously I'm not going to get, and I obviously jokingly say there'll be riots in the streets. I don't want to be, you know, accused of inciting.
No, not at all. Just the firstborn of every male will be sacrificed instead. Yes, that's all that's going to happen. Well, just yes. That.
You better paint your doors, I better tell you. But, well, I'm just going to say, there's no way that can happen now. Is it possible to do a very good PG-13 action movie? Yeah, I think that, and I'm sure that can be done.
Well, it depends on what you mean by action.
Depends on what you're doing.
It depends on what you mean by action.
That's true.
I mean,
I like action movies, but I'm not like, you know, and you know, not to get, you know, referential here, but on Chud, there's the B-movie action thread. I can't, you know, do it like these guys. Why? Because most of this stuff is utter shit and it's boring. You know, it's a bad sign when I'm bored by gunplay. And just, you know, that's a big problem. And,
Rambo 4?
I didn't see Rambo, oddly enough. I should have, and I didn't. And obviously, that movie had to have been a hard R. There's no way you could have done a Rambo with...
That movie is insanely violent. That's shocking. Yeah. I was shocked how this got past the MPAA. It just further proves the rule that they are okay towards violence. It's just like South Park said. You can do whatever you want and with violence, but don't say length, but you can't show a shred of nudity and you will get, like, slapped with the NC-17
rating. There's a thing about sex, it's especially, which is going to be, which is funny you mentioned The Hangover. There's, I think, the scene. I wonder how they got that through the MPAA. It's at the end with the pictures. But
money.
Yeah, no, there's a very big contradiction with violence versus sex. And, you know, it's a shame. I mean, you know, granted, I mean, you know, you're not – I'm sure you could do a movie involving sex and there's a way not to be titillated. But, well, yeah, there are ways. But it's a difficult area. I mean, that's like the concept of the mainstream porno. That's not gonna, you know, there was an attempt. It was called Caligula, and we don't need to revisit that ever again. So,
Jamie will tell you, I have seen the full uncut version of Caligula, and there's no going back to me.
Well, at least, you know, God bless. It's not two girls, one cup. So.
That's that might be the title of this podcast, Ed.
I'm on now.
That's funny.
I'll just mention something else. I'm not going to judge it, and I am looking forward to the movie. I think it's got potential. Having said that, these on-set pics of Josh Brolin as Jonah Hex, does look like he's just had a bad day on a tanning bed.
Yeah, I'm not really crazy about those pictures either. Everyone's like, you know, coming everywhere about those pictures, and it's like, yeah, it looks okay. You know?
It's fine. You're going to have to see it in context. I mean,
that's true.
I'm not going to get uppity over the fact that he doesn't have the giant eye. Why? Because in real life, if he had a giant eye like that, more than likely he's not going to be able to see out of that thing. It's not going to be like – it would be like Dennis Hopper in Waterworld, essentially.
What's Two-Face?
Yeah, Two-Face's staff infections.
Two-Face had no eyelid, essentially. It was a bare eye. I mean, you're not going to be able to walk around very long like that, because that's going to – dry out and get infected. So, you know, I think that'll be a good project. Brolin is perfect for the role.
Yeah, he is.
You know, and it'd be cool to, you know, really get engaged in a good Western, which is, I'm not a big fan of Westerns. It's difficult for me to get into them, but I think this could be the sort of thing, because it's a great character.
Well, it's a comic book movie, so they're not going to sell it as a Western. They're going to sell it as a comic book movie, if anything.
Perhaps,
but the fact that it's opening in August is kind of interesting, because, you know, the last Western-esque movie to open in August, and someone will have to correct me on this, but I believe it was the 310 to Yuma remake, and that movie actually did pretty decent. It made about $60 million.
You're right. You're right. Because I know there was a Western after that. That was Appaloosa, but I don't know if that made any money.
No, it didn't make any money. That came out like in October, which at that point, you know, I don't know. People want to watch horror movies, I guess, in October. It's weird. You have to put your movies in a certain month or you're probably going to lose money. That's what shocks me.
It helps if you can say the name of the movie.
That's true. That too. I mean, that was the problem with The Shawshank Redemption, apparently. Which, Frank Darabont won that war. But, you know, whatever.
Well, I think also with 310, it was just because of that. There's that dead period of film. And, you know, 310, you know, was supposed – I haven't seen it, but it was supposed to look good. So that's why people went to it, because there's nothing else to see.
Yeah, I mean, but like you think about like Drag Me to Hell, and they came out at the end of May, up against Up, and you know it just never sounded like a good idea. I mean, it sounded stupid. I don't know why they didn't put that in August or maybe in September or October. I don't know. I mean, I realize you have to face competition from the Saw movies, which that's another franchise that's one where it's inevitable there's going to be one that's going to tank and it's going to go under. But right now they're all making money. They're making money
because
every year.
Because they're so cheap to make. That's why.
Well, I mean, yeah, but they're also making big money. I mean, it's not so much like, you know, compared to the budget. I mean, they're making like $70 million. I mean, that's about as big as horror movies get, usually. I mean, with the exception of the Scream movies, you know, which all made $100 million each, I believe. I mean, that's a rarity for the horror genre, really. Mm-hmm. At least in R-rated horror, you know.
Right.
I mean, some idiot's going to tell me The Ring, but that was PG-13, so right there, you know. So anyway. Fellas, anything else we got?
No, that's pretty much it on my end.
Yeah, what about you, Phil? What you got? Anything?
I do want to say that I just want to do pass my respects to Mr. David Carradine, who died this week.
Oh, yeah.
In situations that I still don't know the bloody truth of it, because I'm getting conflicting reports everywhere. So I'm just going to say he died this week, and it's really, really sad. But it is so good, I think. Look, as me, I'll fully admit it. I knew nothing about his work before Kill Bill. I'd heard his name once on a trailer for a Kung Fu TV movie. I think it joined some episodes together or something. That's literally the only time I ever heard his name. So before Kill Bill, I didn't even know him. And it's so good that you know, Mr. Tarantino put him in a movie, and now people my age, ignorant, foolish people my age, know the name of Carradine or Carradine. I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Carradine.
Okay, I better get it right. And, you know, that he will be remembered as Bill. And that's awesome. So
even though he died in a very anticlimactic way.
Zing.
Yeah, I think, you know, me and Jamie, I think I'm right about this, aren't I, Jamie? You and I both loved Volume 2, and I actually totally understood why they don't have a big fight. Even though I understand it is slightly consumer.
I do. You know why they didn't? Because of the budget, that's why. Not because of
ran out of money? Okay.
Pretty much.
No, I just interpret it as, you know, she's killing all these people, but the minute she finds out that her daughter is still alive, none of it matters anymore. It completely changes everything. And even though they, you know, I can understand where everybody's coming from. It's a very debatable point. They should have a bit of a fight, and they do have a 5-second fight. By that point, I don't think any fight they could have done would have, you know, lived up to people's expectations. And plus, the movie was already 2 hours and 10 minutes by that point.
True.
Do you really want to go on for another 20?
I would have been.
I'm fine with it.
It depends on if you were into the movie. I mean, I was into the beginning of Kill Bill Volume 2. The whole like scene with them in the chapel talking, I loved it. I was so into that. I know other people weren't, mind you, but still.
No, I was. The only thing that disappointed me was that his heart didn't actually explode out of his chest. Because I figured that was, you call yourself the 5-point exploding heart technique, you expect, you know, Temple of Doom heart explosions there,
right.
And it didn't happen, you just fell over. That was a bit lame.
Kind of a cop.
Apart from that, right. Good job, Mr. Carradine. We'll miss you.
Okay, well, folks, thanks for listening.
Yeah, we'll leave memo to the executives for next week.
Yeah,
there's nothing really there, so.
Yeah, there's nothing really, maybe some huge news, maybe like, you know, I don't know, James Cameron will flash somebody with Avatar footage or something, or maybe he'll just flash people in general. I don't know. We'll first talk about. But, folks, thanks for listening to us. We'll be back next week with another edition of Movie Moan here at thinkwithflightthink.com. Ed, Phil, Take us out, sirs.
You missed that.
Oh, I got nothing. I'm going to have to defer to my British associate here.
Remember what we learned today, people. David O. Russell produced Anchorman, and in the future, people with beards are the enemy. Get rid of them. Kill them. Good night. Should